right center net.
Flame bench, there's all kinds of excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
You can put it in the wind column.
Yeah, baby, yeah, baby, yeah, baby.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, let's get it going. We are underway this hour on Flames Talk with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg. Welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hopefully you're having yourself a wonderful start to your week. Hello, Mr. Vickers.
Hello, Patrick. I certainly am, being in your presence.
That's what I like to hear. I'm glad that I could bestow that on you. Hey, how about Rasmus Andersson? And how about Rasmus Andersson's start to the season? That's where we're kicking off this hour. Text lines open at 960-960. We'd love to hear from you throughout the hour if you want to chime in. So Rasmus Andersson, 2 goals, 5 points in Calgary's first 3 games of the season. That means he's on pace for 134
Is everybody in the NHL on pace for 134?
Apparently. That goes back to the first hour on this Tuesday. No, definitely not. Right now, averaging 22 minutes and 58 seconds of ice time, so just under 23 minutes of ice time for Rasmus. He's +6 if you buy into that to lead the team. And I think he also leads the NHL in death stares. He has done 2 of those to opposing fans in his first 3 games. He's been one of the best players on this team through the 3-0 start. He's been a tone setter. He's been edgy. He's been grumpy. He's been a huge, huge part of this great start to the season. Before we dive in on some of the nitty-gritty and things like that, what about you? What really jumps out on the start for Rasmus Andersson?
It's that character and it's that edge, and to be quite honest, you said the word, and I think it's perfect in describing Rasmus Andersson, and I don't mean disrespect when I say it, but grumpy. When you're out there and you're miserable to play against and you're death-staring the opposition after dangling through their team and scoring, when you're able to throw an extra cross check or two and you're chirping away and you're playing with the edge and the swagger that we've seen Rasmus Andersson play at for most of his career, that's kind of when you know he's on, and when he's feeling it is when he's got a little bit of that jerk in him, for, again, lack of a better term. And I think we've seen that through the first 3 games of the season. You mentioned it, 5 points in 3 games, 2 of them goals, share of the team leading points. Leads the team in ice time, just shy of 23 minutes, as you mentioned. Share of the lead in the NHL among points for defensemen as well. So he's been as productive as any blue liner in the league through, again, small sample size. But you mix in the production, you mix in the character that he can be, and that's a great combination when he's able to contribute both at the same time.
Okay, so more than anything else when talking about Raz's start, I love the swagger he's playing with. I love that we're seeing, like, we make jokes about the death stare. Eric Francis, I think, is writing about that on Tuesday morning, and so was listening in on Eric's conversation with Raz at Morning Skate, because I had spoken to Jordan Bay, and I was like, I would love to talk to him about that too. And Eric's like, I think I might be writing a story about that. So I'm like, I'll just listen in on you, because I just want to hear what he has to say. And he's like, yeah, you know, I did it when I scored my 100th point in Vancouver. And so now it just, like, when it feels right, I do it.
I like it.
And he obviously did it when he scored the 4-2 goal in Vancouver. And then he ties the game at Edmonton on Sunday. And this one's a little bit different, because he goes from, like, the right circle all the way over to the other side, opposite boards, and stares down a fan. And
it's the coast, too, that gets me. He just glides in and stares.
Oh, absolutely.
Locks eyes.
And he said that he chooses one fan and chooses a fan in the other team's jersey and just dials in on him. And like, you're like, that's the type of attitude, that's the type of swagger, that's the type of kind of F you mentality that I think the Flames could really thrive on this year. And it's been a talking point for this group, and we've been talking about it since everybody got back for training camp, and people talking about how, you know, they're getting written off, and nobody seems to believe that they're going to do anything. Well, inside that room, they're like, yeah, we don't care what you guys think. But it was Rasmus on like day two or three of training camp where he said, we don't care what you guys write.
Except Wes.
We're just here to you know, go out. We care about what's in this room. We care about what our belief is. So you guys can write whatever you want. That whole mentality, I think Rasmus Anderson has personified it so far through three games. And honestly, knowing his personality, knowing how he likes to chirp, knowing how he likes to get emotional out there, all that type of stuff, I think he's the perfect guy to personify that going forward this season.
Oh, you stole the best adjective, because he really is the symbol of what the Calgary Flames attitude is. There's some confidence. There's a chip on all their shoulders. But there's still that swagger of, we're going to go out and we're going to prove everybody wrong, whether it's for on an individual basis, whether it's on a team basis. They've seen the results. Rasmus has seen the results through the first three games of the season. And again, we're talking about, well, I don't know, 5% of the season. There's still plenty left to go. But for both the individual and the team to start out this way just bodes well for the Calgary Flames.
I love it.
I'll take more of it, to be honest with you.
I think we'll probably see. I don't know if we're going to continue seeing him clip along at, you know,
134
point pace. And I still think Raz can shoot it more. He had the one game in Philadelphia. Ryan Huska talked about it this morning when he spoke with the broadcast teams prior to the game against Chicago Tuesday night. He talked about how the game against Philadelphia had 9 shot attempts, but I still think Rasmus can shoot it more. I still think he can get more pucks on net. He has scored the goals, but his shot rate and his attempt rate actually down from where it is last year again through three games. But more games like that Philadelphia game, and the better that you'll see from him, and I think the more effective he'll be. But he's playing in every situation. He's playing big PK minutes. He's playing number two power play minutes. He's playing even strength. I also think, and we'll get into the defense pairs in just a second, but I also think the defense pair with him and Kevin Ball has really turned into something that has been important for the Flames. But yeah, I think I actually still think there's some room for improvement when it comes to the way that we or what we've seen from Rasmus so far.
Well, and I guess the debate has always been on the power play. Do you go Uyghur unit one? Do you go Anderson unit one? And I would very much argue that Anderson has a harder shot than Uyghur, but Uyghur does a better job of getting it through or making it available for tips or finding ways to get it through a screen and get it to the front of the net. But the thought of Rasmus Anderson shooting more is certainly one. It's been a theme over the course of the last number of years, where if you can get Rasmus up to, you know, 2.5 shots per game on a regular basis, that's the actual shots on goal, not just attempts, then yeah, there's more production to come. And what's the ceiling on Anderson? Is it 50 points, which he's reached before? Is it 60? It all depends to me. The playmaking element of Rasmus Anderson will always be there, the facilitating the play in the offensive zone. But if he's able to get more pucks through to the net and make more of a concerted effort to get pucks going in that direction, I think he can go north of 50, no problem.
And I mean, he's going to keep playing the ice time that he's playing. Like, I think 23, 24 minutes a night, that's kind of what Rasmus Anderson's going to be on this team. And there's no doubt who the top two defensemen I know that are on this team. I know that they're on separate pairings. I know that Rasmus is on a pairing with Ball. I know that Uyghur's on a pairing playing his off wing with Miramanov. But it's Uyghur and Anderson. They're the top two ice time guys on the team. They're the guys that are going to be counted on most for for this team in tough situations, so on and so forth. And they're the guys driving the two pairings. I will say the all-round game from Rasmus after a rough first period against Vancouver has really taken a step too. I've quite enjoyed what we've seen from Anderson and Ball. They've taken on the toughest minutes on the team, 35% offensive zone start, and yet they have definitely got the job done in terms of offensive zone time versus defensive zone time. They've played the most time together at 5-on-5. But take a look at some of these numbers with Anderson and Ball as a pairing. 6-1 are goals for against for the Flames. Expected goals almost 55%, which is pretty solid. High danger scoring chances, 7-7. Scoring chances, 22-19. And they've done this all with the toughest zone start on the team, just under 36%. It's been a very, very solid start for that pairing. Again, I thought Ball and Anderson struggled mightily in the first 20, 25 minutes on Wednesday against Vancouver.
Who didn't?
Agreed. Since that time, they've been really good. And I think there's even more. I think Ball and the way he plays, he's never going to be a guy to lead the rush. He's never going to be a guy that's going to, you know, be first up on it. He allows Raz to go do that, and I think is a real perfect foil for the way Anderson plays and the way Anderson plays when he's at his best.
Yeah, it allows Anderson a little bit more freedom to freelance offensively a little bit when you have a guy like Kevin Ball who's more of a stay-at-home type that's dependable, that if you end up getting caught deep in the offensive zone, you still know that you've got something. Let's keep in mind, Ball hasn't played that much hockey so far. He's still ramping up as well. He missed almost all of preseason. What did he get in? Two games, one with Rasmus Anderson at the tail end of preseason. So there's still an adjustment level between Anderson and Ball to hit that full sort of chemistry stride, if you will, and that'll continue to grow, and it'll be blossoming, hopefully, if you're head coach Ryan Huska, into a formidable pair that you don't need to go away from at all. But yeah, you look at some of those numbers. They've played 44 minutes at even strength together, one goal against, 6-4, and one goal against. Like, that's chef's kiss in terms of numbers. If you're the defensive coach for the Calgary Flames, you're quite happy with what you've seen out of that pair.
I think that only has the potential to keep growing here as they move forward. And that kind of leads us to the last big talking point on Rasmus Anderson, and that is his future with the team. Because they can start talking extension at the end of the season, and I honestly think that is the right move. I think extending Rasmus, I think keeping him in the fold, I think giving him the raise that he deserves on a long-term deal. If I'm the Flames, I think that's the way to go. You drafted this guy. He is a natural right-shot defenseman who is one of your best players and a core veteran who wears a letter. To me, Rasmus Anderson's a no-brainer. You want to keep that guy, especially what we just talked about the attitude and all of what he personifies on this team. Like, to me, if I'm the Flames, there's no doubt about it. I'm trying to extend this guy and keep him in the fold. I don't subscribe to, and I understand where some fans are, like, hey, need to get younger, need to get assets, so on and so forth. But Anderson's not one of those guys that I'm talking about moving out. He's not one of those guys that I'm saying, oh, yeah, they should try to move him this year or next summer, whatever the case may be. The only way I'm trading Rasmus Anderson is if he gives you the indication that he doesn't want to stay, is if he gives you the indication that signing long-term is not going to be in the cards.
No, he's one of your core six for a reason. We've heard Ryan Huska talk about the core six all through training camp, all through the start of the season. He is one of your culture setters for the Calgary Flames. And to me, it's a little bit different situation than a Kuzmenko or a Mantha or whomever in terms of a guy that's going to be, you know, 28 or 29 and signing them to an extension. He's a homegrown guy first and foremost. He's a member of your leadership team. He's one of the guys that sets the example. We've talked all segment about the fact that he's the symbol of the Calgary Flames right now, both in terms of the success that he's had but the swagger he's carried as well. And also, you need players like Rasmus Anderson and Mackenzie Weegar around to help show the way for the next young generation of Flames defensemen in how to approach the game and how to deal with situations and how to deal with life on and off the ice. I mean, Rasmus Anderson, to get to the point that he is now, where he's been a member of the organization for 10 years and he's an NHL veteran now, there's a lot he's seen off the ice, hockey-related, off the ice, in other facets of his life. Like, he's somebody that can really be beneficial to a Brustevich or a Grushnikov or, again, Poirier. Like, I'm not even necessarily talking about how those players play the game. It's about learning to be a pro, and Rasmus Anderson is just that.
I don't see the wisdom in moving that guy out unless he says, yeah, Connie, I'm probably not going to sign. You know, if it's a Noah Hanifin situation, then sure, yeah, you try to make a move. But if I'm Craig Conroy, I am this summer going to the Anderson camp and saying, hey, let's talk about a 7 or an 8 year extension. And I know that he's, what, 28 years old now?
27, turning 28 in 2 weeks.
Yeah,
one week.
Sounds about right. But I'm trying to lock that guy up. That's a core piece. That's a tone setter. That's a guy that you've drafted, developed, and brought up. And
can play 23 minutes a night.
And we keep on talking about, you know, how important it is to have guys who want to be here, right? And who want to be a part of this thing going forward. That's the one thing that I don't know or can't get a read on is what is Rasmus's what's his desire
what's
to
his
stay
long-term
here
long term.
That's where the trade conversation comes in. But where I do push back is anytime I hear, well, they gotta trade Rasmus Anderson at this year's deadline, I don't think that's the way to go about it unless you know full well that I don't think you can go down that road until you start having contract conversations with him and his camp this summer. That's when you can maybe start to get an inkling. Because I think in hindsight, Conroy might have looked at it and said, you know, maybe the way things went with Noah and how difficult that trade was to get to a finish line and get kind of close to what we were looking for, maybe Craig would have traded Hanifin a little earlier than he did. Maybe after the first time, you know, well, I think it was in Buffalo when they were close to a contract early in the season. Buffalo, Pittsburgh. It was early in the season last year where Hanifin and the Flames were that close to signing. And then it fell apart. You know, I think in hindsight, Conroy might have been like, yeah, maybe that would have been the best time to move him then or start working on it then instead of waiting until the new year. But I don't think you're at that spot right now with Anderson. I think Rasmus Anderson's time to start thinking about a trade is early next season if you don't have a good idea that he's going to sign. But priority number one, if it's me, is trying to get him signed to a long-term extension.
Yeah, I'm a firm believer that you need good veterans to help young players. And Rasmus Anderson, again, is one of those guys. He's one of your core six. He's on your leadership group. He wears a letter. He also plays 24 minutes a night. He's productive. He's reliable out there. He buys guys time to develop and get ready because not every player's development is linear. And actually, Rasmus Anderson's a good example of that as well. You need players like Rasmus Anderson that you can roll out for 23, 24, 25 minutes a night and help bring young players along. But also, to your point, that's not the only reason why you'd want to re-sign him. He's still a very effective NHL defenseman, and we could sit here and debate all day whether he's the Calgary Flames' best defenseman or if he's their second-best defenseman. But regardless, if you have the opportunity to sign him long-term, and again, player that was drafted in 2015, he's been the only organization he's ever known as the Calgary Flames. Not that you should grow attached and make poor business decisions because a guy's been in the organization for a certain period of time, but the fit for Rasmus Anderson in Calgary, if I'm looking at it from a Flames perspective, is one I definitely look at extension before I go, okay, well, let's just trade every vet that's 1 year or 2 years away.
And honestly, he can't leave because that means Wes would have to relocate. So
I do hear Wes is willing to do that.
No, Wes just got a dog, man. Wes ain't
hey, I know
going
a rabbit
anywhere.
That made its way from California to Calgary.
Yes, it was a very harrowing adventure, as we found out.
Harrowing?
You are out of – you are so – like, you might be on suspension. We might need – Wes might need to co-host.
Pull Wes out of the bullpen?
Like, you are out of bounds today. From the clavicle thing last hour to this, I am throwing so many flags. You're on academic suspension. This text comes in, says, guys, I'm pretty certain Craig Conroy is never going to let a player walk like it happened with Johnny. He said it publicly, and so he'll know the temperature of Anderson's intentions and act accordingly. I agree wholeheartedly, 1,000%, but doesn't mean that you know that now. I don't think you really start to get a grasp on that until the summertime. July 1 is when technically you can start to have conversations about an extension. Now, we all know these things happen, and you can give an agent a call about somebody else and be like, oh, by the way, your other client, Rasmus Anderson, what about it? Like, that stuff happens all the time. What else we got here on the text line at 960-960? Steve makes a good point. Remember Hogan Lube when he joined us right after Ras got drafted in 2014? And I asked him about Rasmus. He says right now, because Rasmus had played in the Swedish League before coming to the Barrie Colts in the Ontario League. And I asked Lube about him. He said, you know, the reputation his of his was a little bit lazy, a little bit unfit. And so this text says, a little lazy, a little unfit, good for Rasmus to change that narrative. Damn right, because he absolutely has changed that narrative and turned himself into a really, really good defenseman in this league. This says, Pat, respectfully, if the Flames are not looking at the playoffs this season come the deadline and a team offers you the farm for Rasmus, then pull the trigger. I love the dude and hope he's a Flame for life, but I also understand the reality of the situation. This reads... from Dustin in Royal Oak, if there was one player on this roster that I think has the intention of being with the Flames long term, it's Rasmus, and he's definitely a guy that I want in the dressing room. That comes from Dustin in Royal Oak. This is, how dare you throw a flag on that amazing pun, so you've got somebody on your side.
Somebody believes in me. It's probably my wife.
This says, fellas, if the Flames continue to keep their cap space and continue to have success by training the younger players in the right direction, there's no reason why they shouldn't be able to re-sign Anderson and hopefully to a long-term extension. That's if he's willing to stay. And this says, they better not trade Rasmus. I name my kid after him. Raz, now
no
you
pressure.
Now you have to stay. This person named their child
so
after
do we
you.
Think, do you think the kid's name is Rasmus, or could you go Anderson as a first name?
I don't know. Either would work.
That's what I'm good for, useless questions.
Hey, and this says, Patty, I remember when Raz kicked me out of a Flames party when he was a rookie. I've loved him ever since. Always had his team's back. Definition of a leader. I would love to know this. I would love to talk to you about those circumstances. But you know what? Raz is a team guy. And that I remember Raz getting so mad once about a question somebody asked about Juuso Välimäki. It was during the bubble year. And somebody asked about Juuso struggling. And Raz answered the question but was so mad about it because he's like, don't be talking about my teammates like that. He really is a team-first guy. And I think that that is another really important trait about number four when talking about, you know, the reason why the Flames would want to keep him long-term. By the way, Texter says they named him Rasmus. So,
there we go.
There you go. 960 on the text line. Thanks for all the input on this Tuesday edition of Flames Talk. Hey, we know the NHL is back. We're now a week or so into the season, and you can catch hockey all season long. Hockey action all season long on Sportsnet Television and Sportsnet Plus. And Rogers Beyond the Seat brings Rogers customers closer to the hottest sports and entertainment experiences. And to kick off this year, Rogers is giving its customers and fans across Canada the chance to win a trip to any NHL game this season. And if that's not enough, hundreds of other NHL prizes all season long. For your chance to win, go to Rogers.com/NHL. One more time, for Rogers Beyond the Seat, it's Rogers.com/NHL. Contest closes on October 25th.
This is Flames Talk. Join the conversation at 960-960. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, Steinberg Vickers on this Tuesday edition of Flames Talk from the Scotiabank Saddle Dome and the Hot Stove Lounge. So Matt Coronato made his season debut for the Flames on Sunday in that 4-1 win over Edmonton. And was mostly on the fourth line with Lomberg and Kirkland. Thought he played well. Thought that line was very good, first of all. That line was very strong. You know, Kirkland in his second game. Lomberg's been the constant in all three games on the left side. And I thought they just played really well all night long. But I thought Coronato had some nice stretches in that game. Had the one breakaway. And I think he earned another opportunity to stay in the lineup with the way he played on Sunday night in Edmonton. What were your before we hear from head coach Ryan Huska, your thoughts on what we saw from Matt Coronato in his season debut with the Flames?
Yeah, I was quite encouraged by what I saw, to be honest. And they played under 10 minutes as a line together. But they felt impactful, and it didn't feel like you had to shelter them away from the big line of the Edmonton Oilers. They still managed to generate offense despite who they were going up against. It just felt like that trio in particular felt more cohesive to me than perhaps with Klapka in that spot on the fourth line right wing instead of Coronato. I just liked what I saw from the eye test. I don't have any numbers to back it up, but it just felt like they were always generating positive momentum as a group. And for Coronato to make his debut in a Battle of Alberta game, that's a tough game to jump into when you've been sitting for about a week or so between actually playing games and waiting to play your first real game. Not that preseason isn't real, but not quite the same level. I thought he acquitted himself quite well, and I think he earned another look.
This is the head coach, as he spoke on Tuesday morning and was asked a little bit about Matt Coronato staying in the lineup. Adam Klapka will sit for a second consecutive game on Tuesday night.
You know, we talk about him a lot of times as being an offensive player, but he worked like a checker last game, and he still had a breakaway chance. He's still around it a lot, so we were quite excited with the way that line played.
Is that a good building block for a guy like him when you check off that side of it first and then still see the offense?
Yeah, I hope so, for sure. But I also like that there's still some competition there because Adam played well, too, his first two games. So, you know, we take people out of the lineup. Really, the thought process in Edmonton was about back-to-back, and we wanted fresh people in there. But he had a really good game, so he's going to stay in there.
I just think keeping him up on the roster is the way to go for now. You know, when Sharon Govich comes back, I think that enters or brings up an interesting conversation. But right now, with the roster as it's set, I think him and Klapka rotating in on the right side of that fourth line, nothing wrong with that. And I think that, you know, in one game, Matt, as I said, did enough to get back in for game two. And the other thing is, still don't know what's going to happen here with Hanzek. You know, Hanzek has had some nice stretches. He's had some stretches where he hasn't been as impactful. There is a entry-level slide the team needs to think about a little bit. If he plays a 10th game, then all of a sudden his entry-level contract does start rolling. If he plays less than 10 NHL games, even if he goes to the American League, they can slide it for one more year and essentially get 5 years out of him on a 3-year entry-level deal. We don't have to get into the nomenclature of the CBA and entry-level slides, but that is an accurate statement is what I'm saying. There's just a lot of things to consider, and I think for right now, having him remain on the NHL roster and get some playing time, there's nothing wrong with that.
No, absolutely. And one, it gives Ryan Huska some options, and it keeps some competition going between two young players in Klapka and Coronato, but it also gives the ability for Huska to go with a couple different looks. If he wants a speedy fourth line, you pop in Coronato. If you want more of a grinding, physical type player, you can go Klapka. And I remember talking, it's like, okay, well, what happens with Hanzik here, and where does he need to play? And it felt like the consensus between us was he was a better fit on the fourth line than a player like Matt Coronato, assuming a roster was healthy for the Calgary Flames. Now, it's not with Sharon Govich, it's not with Rooney. But I don't mind Coronato in a fourth-line role with a center of Justin Kirkland, with the speed of Ryan Lomberg, because I think that trio, again, small sample size, less than 10 minutes at 5-on-5, but they were able to have a positive impact, not just defensively, but offensively as well, in terms of generating chances and keeping play north, things of that sort. And I don't mind Matt Coronato. I know it's more ideal to have a young player of Coronado's skill set in your top nine, where he's able to play a more offensive role, where he's able to feel better about his game offensively, because we know how much he prides himself on his goal-scoring ability. You look back to Harvard, you look back to, well, look back to the Wranglers last year, and go back to the Chicago Steel in the United States Hockey League. But it's not as if Matt Coronato is devoid of any sort of defensive IQ or acumen. He can play a two-way game. He can do it on the wing. I've seen him do it at the World Championship down the middle. I don't necessarily think it's the worst thing in the world. If Matt Coronato's getting ice time with the Calgary Flames, it's on that fourth line, and you're able to maybe spot him a little bit of power play time or move him up and down the lineup if there's somebody that's struggling. We haven't necessarily seen that to this point just yet. But I think Matt Coronato staying up right now is a worthwhile sort of endeavor to keep taking a look at, because he can have an impact all over the lineup.
What is your feel on how things roll here for Hanzek and your impressions of him through three games?
I think he's been okay. He's looked strong at moments, and I think it sometimes he's managed to blend into the background a little bit. I don't think there's anything super glaring that makes me go, ooh, you got to get him out of the lineup immediately because things just aren't working. But I do think that there's an educational benefit to having him watch from up top. It doesn't need to be a two-game or a five-game stretch, but just get him up and have him observe from a little bit different vantage point about, okay, what does time and space really look like from a different perspective? And this isn't an indictment on what I think of Sam Hanzik's long-term projection, nor even what I've seen through three games. But I do think that there's still a bit of a learning curve that he can absorb, and if he needs to do that by watching a game, I've got no problem with that.
Right now, I've got no problem with what I've seen from Hanzek through three games. I think I know he doesn't have a point yet, but he has been, I think, an impact maker more than he is blended right into the background. You take a look at his individual metrics at 5-on-5. He's got 3 high dangers, 5 scoring chances. His individual expected goals, one of the best on the team. I've had no issues with Hanzek for the most part. You know, playing with a veteran like Kadri who demands the puck, and I say that in a good way. That's part of what makes Kadri who he is. But Kadri's always been a guy who wants the puck, who demands the puck. And you're a 19-year-old, doesn't even turn 20 until next month. You've got this, you know, Nazem Kadri, Stanley Cup winner, one of the biggest presences on the team. You're playing with him. I look back to the opportunity he had Sunday night in Edmonton where he had a pretty decent scoring chance on his backhand. Instead of shoveling it towards the net, he moved it to Kadri instead, and I just think that's natural when you're playing with an established high-end player like Nazem, and you're a young 19-year-old. Yeah, you're probably going to defer to the veteran. You're probably going to defer to one of the leaders on the team, one of the best players on the team, and so I think that will only continue to evolve. So I'm not personally ready to be sending Hanzek to the American League. I'm not personally ready to even be talking about healthy scratching him because I think he's been pretty solid for him.
Yeah, I don't think certainly not right now. The AHL isn't in the conversation for me. If you get Rooney back and you get Sharangovich back in short order, you're going to face a little bit of a roster crunch and you're going to have a couple decisions to make. Maybe it changes then, but for me right now, And even when those players come back, Hanzik isn't the first option I'd fight for to get him, you know, top line minutes down the AHL. He's still playing a prominent role. He's still able to contribute in a fourth line situation. He's still able to contribute on the penalty kill. He's one of your fastest players. He's one of your biggest players. He's one of your best players when it comes to puck protection and playing the cycle game and working down low. There are a lot of things I've liked out of Hanzik, but again, my opinion of him, it isn't a slight or a negative element where I say I'd like to see him watch a game from up top, because I think that is an educational experience more than a, hey, we're not happy with you and we need to give you a kick in the butt sort of thing.
What else do we have to talk about? Dustin Wolf gets the start again Tuesday, so it's going to be through 4 games, a perfect split. 2 for Vladar, 2 for Wolf.
The Wes Gilbertson rotation, as he's claimed ownership of, it does seem like.
Probably would have been, like, we could call it the Pat Steinberg rotation too if we wanted, because this is exactly the way I would have gone.
Yeah.
It makes sense. I know that you talked a little bit on Monday's program. You know, at times felt like Vladar's been a little shaky early, but has gotten himself into games. I really liked Wolf in his game against Philadelphia on Saturday. I think it's actually been pretty impressive to see the way both guys have started the season, but neither guy has been the, oh, well, clearly we got to give this guy a run of games. Not at this point. I think for the first few weeks of the season, whether it's every other game, that doesn't really matter. But if we, early on in the season, if we see a lot of kind of flip-flopping or a lot of both guys getting an opportunity, that makes nothing but sense if you ask me, because you want to see when a guy maybe gets into a groove, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And just the way the schedule sort of shaped up to start the season, you've got last Wednesday in Vancouver, then 2 days off, then you're in a back-to-back situation. So once you get there, you're already at one goalie gets 2, one goalie gets 1, because you're not going to start a goalie in a back-to-back situation with travel going up to Edmonton on Sunday and then coming back to Dustin Wolf on Tuesday night against the Chicago Blackhawks. It's a fair and split workload, and I would have to imagine that was maybe not quite in pen, because things can happen. There can be a tweak, there can be an injury, there can be any number of scenarios that play out, but I would have to think that this was absolutely the plan going into the season, where, hey, you sit down Dan Vladar, you sit down Dustin Wolf, and you go, here's how we're doing it for the first 4 games. And then we'll reevaluate from that point. And they'll have some time. There'll be 3 days off after the game against the Chicago Blackhawks. And then after that, outside of a 2-game stretch between a road game at Seattle and a home game at Pittsburgh the following Tuesday, you play every second night. So you do have the opportunity to sort of extend the experiment a little bit and rotate through until one guy seizes the opportunity and gets the bulk of the games.
I honestly, like, I don't know how this ends up playing out. I do think that an even split is the way to go, and I do think, at least in the early going, And I don't really think at any point in, at least in the first half of the season, do you really get the feeling that one guy is going to take over and turn into a number one at any point this season? It doesn't feel like that's in the cards.
No, I could see a scenario where one of the two guys gets hot for a stretch, then cools. The other guy gets hot for a stretch and then cools. And maybe during certain segments there's dips in their play. But I don't think that this is going to be a scenario where in the first 41 games of the season, one guy is just so clearly head and shoulders above the other that you've got to ride a Dan Vladar, for example, or a Dustin Wolf for an 8-9 sort of stretch. I don't think that that's the scenario we're going to be looking at.
Yep. What'd you make of, as Wolf gets the start Tuesday against Chicago, what'd you make of him against Philadelphia? I thought he was one of the two or three biggest reasons they were able to win that hockey game.
He's just so quiet in a good way. He's just so, again, he is one of the best moving goaltenders in the NHL in terms of his ability to teleport out to the top of the crease or move east-west in the crease, and he's one of the most active by default almost in having to keep an eye on looking through traffic just because of the stature that he doesn't have. He was good in a quiet way, and I can understand if it doesn't look exciting and it doesn't look dynamic and you're going, well, what's the hype about this guy? He let in 3 goals, didn't really do too much out there. Well, he puts himself into position to make sure that he doesn't have to do too much out there. And when you start seeing some highlight reel saves outside of, you know, a quick east-west pass where you got to go post to post and sprawl to make a save, the saves that Dustin Wolf needs to be making are the quiet ones where he's setting in position early, because that's when you know he's on his game.
Final thought before we wrap up this hour and wrap the sports drive is the Justin Kirkland conversation. We talked a little bit about it and kind of in depth on the roundtable in the first hour of Tuesday's Flames Talk. But, you know, Kirkland's metrics are really strong through two games. The line he's centered with Lomberg and Klapka one night, Lomberg and Coronado the other night, has been one of Calgary's better lines or more consistent lines. He scores his first goal. I'm really curious what the conversation becomes when Kevin Rooney's ready to return. He's eligible to return off IR on Wednesday, so his first game eligible to be back is Saturday in Seattle. I have no idea if he'll be ready or not, but you know the way Kirkland's played has made this a really interesting conversation when it comes to, you know, icing your best possible lineup. And that's not a knock on Rooney at all, who plays an important role as the penalty killer and has kind of been the incumbent number four center for quite some time. I'm just curious as to how this plays itself out a little bit.
I think there can be the potential of a little bit of a competition between Kirkland and Rooney when Rooney comes back, just from what we've seen out of Kirkland. Again, small sample size, and he's only averaging just under 11 minutes a game. But the early look has been favorable for Kirkland in terms of his skating ability, the sort of getting in and disrupting on the forecheck. Again, that trio, it's just of the three games that we've seen, you can't really include the Vancouver game because Rooney was out so early, but in the latter two games, I really like the combination of Kirkland, Lomberg, and Coronado. And so we're going to see that again on Tuesday night. And it's just another step for them to be able to prove that they can be a reliable line, but for Justin Kirkland as well, prove that he can be a reliable center. And if you start developing a little bit of chemistry on that fourth line and they're able to play more on the north side of center ice than they do the south, well, then that's something you're probably going to want to stick with if you're head coach Ryan Huska.
A few texts, 960-960 says, Kirkland, our boy Costco was great. Yes, indeed, that is the nickname. This is not new. We're not breaking
news. He's aware.
He is aware that Costco is his nickname, and it's a very good nickname. How could you not go that direction? It's like anybody with the last name Campbell has always got to be super soupy. Anybody, Vlasic, easy as pickles. Jamie Pringle of the Flames coaching staff, easy as chips. Like, they're just sometimes
empty netters
that are, but they're good empty netters. You have to go with them. And Costco for Justin Kirkland, yes, absolutely. Colin texted in when we were talking about the Wes Gilbertson goaltending rotation. I said, well, I mean, I would have done the exact same thing. Colin says, no sharing credit. It's all Wes. So Colin, and then I asked Colin, I'm like, is this Rasmus Anderson texting in? He said, yes.
I was going to say, Colin is to Wes is what Wes is to Rasmus Anderson.
Apparently, Colin says, no, it's the Wes Gilbertson rotation. So I like that. Connor Bedard and the Blackhawks take on the Flames on Tuesday night as Calgary looks to make it 4-0 to start the season. As we start to wrap things up this hour on Flames Talk, Aaron Vickers is on Twitter at AA Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg, and this hour has been the Sports Drive brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.